It is News Talk ZB with Chris Lynch, and joining us live in the studio this morning is Labour leader Jacinda Ardern. Nice to have you on the programme, and thanks for your time for coming into our studio.
Good morning.
Let's just cover off some of the issues that have been making the international circuits at the moment. Foreign Minister for Australia, Julie Bishop, says she'd find it hard to build a relationship with a Kiwi Labour government. You know, in the scheme of things, are her comments out of line? Is she actually the one interfering with our election process?
Oh, I've certainly made clear that this issue should not get in the way of our important relationship. New Zealand and Australia have a critically important relationship, and not just at a trade and diplomatic level. Yesterday, when this issue arose, when Julie Bishop made those comments, I asked to see the High Commissioner to clarify from our perspective what had happened, and to offer to Julie Bishop to speak with her directly, because, as I say, politics like this should not get in the way of that important relationship.
Did you feel comfortable or happy following that meeting?
Oh, certainly it was the right thing to do, and I stand by all of the steps I've taken since those comments were made by the Minister. And I do ultimately think that this issue will move on, and our relationship with Australia will be as it was. But it certainly needed to make clear that this isn't an issue that should disrupt that relationship.
No, it shouldn't. But as Ms. Bishop said yesterday about this, as you said yesterday, that you'd be happy to have contact with her and extend the hand of friendship, so to speak. Has she taken you up on that offer?
No,
that's
not yet.
In itself, isn't it?
Not yet. But look, it could be pure logistical reasons. I was asked yesterday why I hadn't made the call directly myself. It was simply because I don't have Ms. Bishop's phone number. So it's much easier in some of these circumstances to make sure that the conversation and the message was relayed via the High Commission. That was the most direct thing I could do, and that's what I did.
I was listening to a lot of commentary regarding this overnight and early this morning, and I have to agree with what the Channel 9 political editor said, and that is, this is nothing more than a smokescreen for a government that is in serious trouble in Australia with a one-seat majority. I think that was bang on, actually.
Yeah, and certainly I've seen some of that commentary as well. And ultimately, we need to get back to our own issues. We're in the middle of an election campaign. It benefits no one to be having conversations that detract from things that are important domestically. So right back into the campaign again today. That's why I'm here in Christchurch. We've got some really important things that I wanted to hear about here. And it was really important to me that early on in my leadership that I come here, meet with the mayor, go and visit the Cup briefly, but actually ultimately make an announcement that we think is really important for Christchurch.
I'll get to that shortly. Do you believe in your heart of hearts that Chris Hipkins didn't know why he was asking that question about New Zealand and Australian citizenship? I mean, I find that a little bit hard to believe.
He certainly made it clear to me that he certainly knew the context. You know, he certainly knew that there were debates around citizenship that were affecting MPs. So he certainly knew that. But never, he's confirmed with me that never was it specifically raised that this would have an impact on Mr. Barnaby Joyce. So the context, yes. The specific person, no. But look, regardless of the context, he should never have asked those questions. I've made that really clear. He certainly accepts that he should not have been involved. So from that respect, we shouldn't have been in this situation. But now that we're here, making it clear that that was a mistake, that Chris has been reprimanded, and that ultimately this should not affect our relationship.
Water, it's a massive issue, particularly in Canterbury. We've had rallies, we've had many protests, and I think even those on the right of politics agree something needs to change here. Why, as a country, are we giving millions of litres of water away to overseas interests for absolutely free?
Yeah, and that's absolutely the issue that we've tried to resolve with our policy. We agree. Those who are taking water from our pristine aquifers and bottling them with no contribution back to New Zealand should be paying a royalty. We think that's an important principle. So that's what our policy will allow us to do. What we really need to differentiate, though, is that there are then others who are using accessing water for commercial gain that we do need to treat fairly, but we won't be treating the same. Someone who bottles water from pristine aquifers, that's the equivalent of gold for water. Someone who's using it for to make a product, perhaps they're using it as part of an irrigation scheme, that's much more like gravel. So we're talking cents per thousand litres versus paying per litre.
But that's interesting in itself, because the fact that the detail's been a bit light, to be fair, that's given the national government the opportunity to scaremonger, hasn't it?
They have scaremongered.
$50 million for an apple, and you had, you know, almost in the hysterics on Q&A the other day.
Yeah.
It was off. But that did give National some leverage to say, oh gosh, you're going to be paying a lot more for the food. Was it a mistake not to come out and be a bit stronger with more detail?
We certainly always made it clear that we would be talking around the thousand, charging per thousand litres, that it was in the cents. We've given a bit more specificity around that. But I do still maintain that the really important message we wanted to give is we're not going to set a clear rate until I've sat down with those who'll be affected. I want to see the differences that it will make from various parts of the country, because we do have different scarcity issues, different water quality issues, and we need to make sure that we factor that in when we set this regime. But it was really important for us to make sure that there was some proportionality in the debate, because there was a lot of scaremongering going on.
National says nobody owns the water. So in your view, who does?
Everybody. Everybody has a stake. Everybody has a stake in our waters being clean and our rivers being able to be possible to swim in. And that's the other driver. Yes, water bottlers and royalties was a big part of it, but a significant reason why I was so clear that we needed to act was water quality. You know, 60% of our rivers rank poorly when it comes to being able to swim in them. We have the ability here to turn that around within a generation, you know, make sure our waterways are what they once were again. And this policy will allow us to do that.
No doubt you've heard by now, in fact I know you have, Prime Minister Bill English says if you charge a royalty on water, you assume the government owns it and there will be consequences from this, e.g. Māori will see this as an opportunity to claim water. Do you worry that you are potentially opening up the floodgates for yet more, give me more money from the iwi groups?
No. In fact, I would refute the principle of royalty claiming ownership. You know, we've got royalty regimes in New Zealand already that relate to minerals and petroleum. But actually, people who have, Sir Ed Drury, for the chair of the Māori Council, ex-Waitangi Tribunal, he himself has dismissed the claims by Chris Finlayson and the Prime Minister. Actually, I found that more disappointing than anything that they made that claim. Chris Finlayson, I think, has done a really good job as Minister for Treaty Negotiations. He will know that actually a lot of those Waitangi tribunals, those Treaty of Waitangi settlements,
they
exclude water. Yeah. And so he would have known that. So I found that really disappointing. Again, actually what we're suggesting here is a resolution, and I'd rather debate how we fix the problem than have people inflate the problem.
David Parker, your colleague, has signalled part of this $100 million collected annually for clean-up work would, though, go to iwi. To do what, though?
It does allow us to resolve some of the issues that the Waitangi Tribunal have raised around Māori's stake in water. Again, we maintain, though, that everyone has a stake. So whilst that royalty could be used in part to settle some of that, it actually will primarily also go to regional councils to help with cleanup. You know, I would envisage,
for instance...
Why on earth
would you want to give money to regional councils?
We would set some expectations around its use. So, for instance, we know that we need to fence off our waterways. So I'd like to assist farmers with that. I'd like to assist them with riparian planting. And that's something that we can do through this scheme.
I'm confused, because on one hand you're saying that this won't open up the floodgates for more treaty settlements for iwi, but at the same time you have accepted that you will give some of this money to iwi.
Oh, separate. This is a separate debate around their stake in water. And look, even the government currently acknowledges that there is an issue there to be resolved. What the minister has claimed, that means that we'll be retrospectively going back and renegotiating treaty claims, and that's incorrect. But there is an issue that the Waitangi Tribunal have raised around water and Māori's stake in water more generally. It's not a question of ownership for us, though. That's simply, as we've stated, water is, everyone has a stake in it.
It sounds, though, like a bureaucratic nightmare in some respects, because you have talked about that the tax or the levy on some water will go to some areas. It'll be different for different areas depending on the water scarcity. That sounds so messy.
No. I mean, look at the way that we deal with... look, I used to work for Crown Minerals, so I know how royalty regime works for minerals. There's variance there. We deal with that. But ultimately, we've got two options here. We have a flat rate, which would be unfair and would probably probably cause some issues, or actually we put some variants in to make it fair. I'm opting for the second. I'm absolutely clear that we can make it workable because we do in other regimes.
The debate has focused on the water tax, particularly for dairy farmers, as a way to clean up the rivers, but Irrigation New Zealand, yes, says half of New Zealand's irrigated land has other uses: sheep, beef, crops, vegetables, fruit and grapes. And they say in an opinion piece on the Herald the other day, if a water tax is introduced, consumers would pay more. Are they right?
Oh, we've actually, our team sat down with Horticulture New Zealand, and one of the points that was raised that actually the variance that you see set by supermarkets makes more of a difference for consumers than what this will. We're talking, you know, parts of a cent or a cent in some cases. So
But you know that companies can be disingenuous and say, oh, you know, the water tax is really going to hurt us. We're going to have to put up our prices. How do we set regulations, though?
I do actually think that the supermarkets have more control and are more of an issue in that sense than what this pricing issue will create for consumers. So we've sat down with the growers, and really they've made it clear to us that the supermarkets and the way they set prices will be more of an issue than this.
You've got dairy farmers up and down Canterbury who are nervous at Labor's policy. You accept that they're nervous, saying, oh no, they're anti-irrigation. This is the thin edge of the wedge. We can't possibly vote for a government that wants to put taxes on our hard-working industry.
Of course, those farmers
are... You've got a public relations issue
there,
haven't you?
Yeah, look, we accept that we need to have that conversation with them. And I was really clear from the outset. This is not an issue of us versus them. We're all in this together. When it comes to improving our waterways, I know that our farmers feel deeply about that issue too. Many of them are conservationists themselves. So I want that conversation and that open dialogue. This is about what we can achieve collectively. And I know that many would accept that, our waterways, and in the south there are some particular examples, really have been degraded. So we cannot just sit back and wait for that to get better. We're having to make some hard decisions now because we've had inaction for the past decade.
You're right about that. A lot of people who phone up this talkback program, who are both left and right, I think what the general consensus now is, and even when those Greenpeace activists lock themselves into different pipes and tunnels at the Canterbury, you know, Plains Water Scheme, I was quite surprised by some of our right-leaning callers who actually were thinking, well, you know what, they are raising a bit of a good point here. Some of our rivers are looking pretty crabby. And for the first time in my career, I noticed a distinct difference with some of our callers who, for the first time ever, were going, well, actually, the Greenpeace people can come across as nutty, but they're raising a good point here.
Yeah.
And, you know, with this irrigation scheme that's right up and down the South Island. Yeah. What do you say?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, most people will acknowledge that rivers that they used to be able to swim in, used to be able to put your head under without worrying about, are in a different state now than they were perhaps when someone was a child. I think people instinctively know that something's not right. What we're proposing here is a solution, a way forward. Some of these issues are not going to be easy, but let's be really clear, the government itself has acknowledged we have a problem. We've been transparent about what we want to do. We're asking that the government does the same, because at the moment they've kicked out this issue around water and royalties till December, so we don't really know what their plan is. We're willing to have the debate and the discussion to come up with solutions together, and hopefully in our generation I want those waterways to be clean.
All right. But the government, though, has got some working group, don't they, at the moment, to look at the issues with water, to look at the issues of taxing
group.
Water?
They have.
What does a working group do? Is Labor part of that?
No, we're not. They've kicked it to a technical working group, and they're going to report in December. So we don't know what they want to do. So either they'll accept that we need to put a royalty on those water bottlers, or they won't, and everything will remain the same.
We need to take a break. I'm with Labor leader Jacinda Ardern live in our Christchurch News Talks of East studio. We're also live streaming the interview on our Facebook page at facebook.com/ChrisLynchZB. Back with more in just a moment. It is News Talk ZB with Chris. You can always email me your questions or your thoughts at chris@newstalkzb.co.nz. As I stall to make sure the live Facebook feed comes through. Here we go, great. And my guest is Labor leader Jacinda Ardern. Jacinda, let's just touch on youth offending, which I think is very important. We are seeing an alarming rate of youth crime in this country at the moment, and violent crime. Now, to give context, though, what I'm reassured by is that the numbers of youths committing crime is actually coming down. But you actually could be forgiven for thinking otherwise. Mm. When I'm so sick and tired of seeing the Derry and Woolston being mugged by 15, 16-year-old girls. The same thing's happening in Auckland. And not just at the poor areas, might I add. It's happening everywhere. National wants these boot camps to readdress the issue. To be fair, it's not just the boot camps that have failed in the past. They're going to have wraparound support, social service agencies around this too. But largely, it's been condemned as being nothing more than politics. So if that is the case, then what's your solution? Because we've got a massive issue here of disrespect.
Yeah. And one of the things that we've talked about, though, is that these things don't just suddenly happen overnight. There'll be often issues that will predate, I guess, those final acts of, as you say, brutal violence, which is not okay, which we do need to be doing something about. Our focus has always been on early intervention. What are we doing when those first signs of truancy and issues within schools, what are we doing when those markers start coming up? Actually, some of the programs we used to have with our community police were great. You know, I visited one once where they were not just working with kids that were having issues, but their siblings, because they saw that they might be the next offenders. If we don't have enough police available, some of those great preventative community policing programs end up being the last cab off the rank. And so I do think some of our plans around increasing that level of service, those kinds of initiatives will help. But when it comes to the severe end, so those are the ones that the government is tackling with this, we don't support things connected to boot camps because all of the evidence suggests that they just don't work. You know, the Children's Commissioner, who was our principal youth court judge, has said that they're one of the worst interventions in the Western world. So we're all about what works, what tells us that we get positive outcomes, what stops reoffending, what keeps our community safe. It does take time. Intensive programs are what it takes, but also working with the family. You can't pluck a kid out of their family, put them into some kind of program, and then dump them back again and think everything will be okay. So we've seen a couple of examples of really good programs that work. One used to be in Hamilton. Unfortunately, it was closed down because the government thought it was too expensive. Those are the kinds of things we want to see back.
I don't particularly think a curfew is going to work either. When I was up with Christchurch Police several years ago, and we were inundated by seeing lots of 13, 14, 15-year-olds at Eastgate, and what police said to me is, I would say, where the hell are their parents? I would be, you know, grounded for life if I was out. And they all said to me, they're in prison, Chris.
And their
other extended family simply don't care. So in order, if their parents or their extended family don't really care about them now, then presumably issuing an instant fine to the family isn't going to work either.
I agree. I mean, we're also suggesting here what the police officer picks the kid up, takes them home, then finds a parent who, you know, may not be the engaged parent that we would hope that they would be, and then that police officer's off the beat for that period of time. The fine probably goes unpaid. Look, you know, I think instead we need to, again, be talking about ways that we can make a real difference. You know, I've sat in on, we've got this amazing system in New Zealand called the Rangatahi Court. So basically, if a young person is picked up in our criminal justice system, rather than just sitting them in a dock, have everything happen around them having no accountability, their parents having no accountability, we've got a system where a young person will go before a court where they actually have to sit front and centre. They introduce their lawyer to the room. They have Komatu and Kuia there who they have to answer to, and members of their community. They have to report on how they're doing in school, what they're doing to change their offending, what community work they're doing. They have to speak for themselves. And I've seen parents sit in that court and having to take responsibility for what's happening with their young person as well. And they've made significant changes in their life because of the accountability suddenly for not just some nameless, faceless person, but to members of their community for what's going on. That's the kind of initiative that I think makes a difference.
A final question this morning. I know we're nearly out of time. I was reading your website last night under Labour's policy to mental health, big issue in Christchurch, as you know, in fact, around the country, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I want to quote, and it says, and I quote, "We will establish a 2-year pilot program of primary mental health teams in 8 sites across the country to work with GPs, PHOs, DHBs. These sites will, of course, include Christchurch, which has seen a huge surge in mental health needs," end quote. I was speaking to several mental health practitioners recently, and I know the national government's released something similar, more pilot programs, et cetera, and so forth. But what I'm hearing from mental health practitioners, Jacinda, is they need more resources for their current workforce,
Agreed.
Not new programs as such.
Agreed.
And I wonder what you make of these comments. Do we actually need new pilot programs, or do we need more resources for the current workforce we have now?
Yeah, and I would agree with that. Just to be clear on, I think what the government's done is they've brought in, for Christchurch specifically, quite a bit more support for screening. But you're right, you screen, you find people in need, and then you're sending them to the same stretch resources and frontline staff. So I agree, that is an issue. What we've been talking about with our pilot actually was the idea of someone, if they present at their GP and their GP recognises that they have some issues around needing mental health support, that within that GP's offices that they will be able to provide that automatically, that there'll be someone there to support them straight away and make sure that they then go on to the services they need. So that's what we've talked about. But actually, we want to do more, because what you've said is right. We can't just then screen and refer to stretch resources. So what we're going to talk about today is one of the things we think we can do to help on that front.
Well, that's interesting. I know you are making a major policy announcement in Christchurch today, and I know it's you're doing that in a few hours' time.
That's
but
right.
Just give us a bit of a hint so we can get an exclusive on News Talk ZB Christchurch.
Well, the hint is that it is in the mental health space. You know, we've seen the demand and the circumstances here are unique and heightened. And so it's acknowledging that actually we do need to bring in more support. And that what we've got here isn't enough. So that's a flavour of what we'll be doing today.
I really appreciate your time this
morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Labor leader Jacinda Ardern. It is News Talk ZB.